Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I've got two guests today. We'll begin the program with Elizabeth Woodworth. Elizabeth is a writer. She's a former head librarian for the British Columbia Ministry of Health. She is involved in a very important initiative called Consensus 911. Elizabeth has been on the program before. Consensus 911 is very, very important. Listeners can access its website. It seeks best evidence proof to dispel official 9/11 lies. I call 9/11 the big lie of our time. That's no exaggeration by any means. And Elizabeth, working with Consensus 9/11, she's responsible for a lot of what goes on in the initiative. A lot of other people are involved as well. Very, very important. Elizabeth also wrote a recent article in early October. It's called Search Engine Manipulation, Google and YouTube Suppress Controversial 9/11 Truth. Well, indeed, it's got a question mark after that, but indeed they do suppress it. We want to discuss it to the top of the program, and then we'll go with my second guest, Matthew Witt, and discuss all the important issues on his mind. Elizabeth, first of all, welcome to you.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Hello.
Explain your article and why it's important.
Okay. I'll start with the main question, an observation. With polls showing approximately 50% of Americans and Canadians doubting the official story of 9/11, how have the government and the media been able to stifle public debate for 12 years? What has it taken to keep a lid on these doubts? And this is something that we've just discovered, how they have managed this. We've basically discovered a brick wall in internet communications about 9/11 that threatened to go viral. And that's what my article is about, is a case study of a particular program from Russia Today, which broadcasts from Moscow and is seen all over the world it's downloaded through cable and satellite. It's also on the internet, on YouTube. In fact, a friend just wrote to me to say that she was in Rome, and she happened to turn on her TV in the motel room, and there was me on this Russia Today program. So the particular program in question ran for 13 minutes, September the 8th, and it featured four members of our consensus panel, some of them wearing other hats, like they're all academics, and one of them was the editor of the Journal of 9/11 Studies, Dr. McQueen, Jonathan Cole from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, Daniel Ganser, a historian in Switzerland. And these people, and underneath the frame on YouTube, where they put the Russia Today posted the video, they mentioned that it was a false flag operation. And this this video, the original that was posted by Russia Today, it just started to go viral. Like within a couple of days, it was up to 131,000 views. And suddenly, and there was an accompanying post of the same program from Moxnet News, and theirs was going viral. They were up to about 85,000. And all of a sudden, both of them just flatlined. Like if you look at the statistics on the YouTube website there, you can see that they flatlined. And you could no longer search for either item in the YouTube or Google search engines. So I noticed this, so did Jonathan Cole, who's also on the panel, and we started trying to figure out what happened. The third thing that happened was that it disappeared from the homepage of the Russia Today Truth Seeker website. It was item number 23 in their series, and it was right at the top, and it just disappeared. So you saw items, all the others, 22, 21, 20, and so on, but not that one. And then I found it buried further down in another web page on their site with a different date. The date, instead of being September 8th, 2013, it was August 1st, 2012. So it seemed that there were two possibilities. One, that Russia Today was being politically pressured to remove definitely downgrade the public availability of this 13-minute broadcast, or it was being interfered with through the search engines themselves. And to settle that question, I'm reporting that in my own attempts to transmit the link to the original Russia Today program to my colleagues, when I sent that link the email was copied to myself, it appeared in the sent basket, but it did not come into my in basket. And the first time that happened, I just thought, oh, well, I didn't format it correctly. Something went wrong. It didn't come through to me. But then I found that nobody answered my email. There were five people addressed. So I carefully formatted it and sent it again and copied myself, and it did not come through a second time. And my blood just ran cold at that point, because I've been, as a librarian, I've been using the Internet and email for 20 years, and I have never had that happen before. I tried a third time. It didn't go through. So then I knew that electronic transmission of that link to the Russia Today program was being blocked in email. And I asked a bunch of systems people that I used to work with, IT people, to come and look at it and watch it happen. And they said, one of them said, there is no benign explanation for this phenomenon. There were other people who could not send the link either. There were, half a dozen. And since I reported it in my article, I've been approached by a number of others who could not post links to really significant 9/11 productions, either on Facebook or by email. And this very day, there's a new interesting thing that happened on Amazon, which I've never seen before, and that is that the new film by Massimo Mazzucco, the September the 11th, The New Pearl Harbor, which is up on YouTube, it's the best documentary that David Ray Griffin or I have ever seen that covers the whole scope of 9/11 just brilliantly.
Can that still be accessed, Elizabeth?
Hmm?
Can that still be accessed online?
Oh, yes, that's very much online. Just go to the YouTube search engine and type in September 11, no TH, just September 11 dash the New Pearl Harbor, and it comes up. It's a five-hour total survey of everything that's known about 9/11. And all the early interviews with all the firemen and the people who came out of the lobbies, saying that the lobbies were just blown to smithereens by bombs. All that stuff that's disappeared.
Surprised that it is still available. If it starts going viral, you can bet it's going to be pulled. To assure full disclosure, Google owns YouTube. Eric Schmidt, the head of Google, is very tight with the Bilderberg Group. I've written about him. He believes that privacy should no longer exist. Google also conspires very, very closely with NSA, with NSA spying. It's a rogue operation. There's no question about that. And, of course, a very successful one financially.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Now, David Griffin, David Ray Griffin, who's co-founder of the panel, he wrote a really good review of Massimo's new documentary and posted it. His review is available. It's on Global Research, and he also posted it to Amazon. Now, on Amazon, where the DVDs sell, Massimo has posted the video for free after 3 years of giving his life to this project. He's given it to the world, but to buy the DVD, which involves shipping and so on, you pay a little bit. And that's on Amazon. But today, yesterday appeared a very strange notice that some of us have never seen before on the Amazon website, saying that his item is under review. In a big yellow box with an exclamation mark. Very strange kind of intercession into normal Amazon sales. And so that casts doubt further. You know, that's a little question of doubt that hovers over his movie. These kinds of interferences just happen to pop up all the time when you're trying to get through to really significant 9/11 information.
Well, there's no question, Elizabeth. I mean, so much has happened, as we both know, in the post 9/11 era. I've written a great deal about 9/11, and such a great amount about all of the horrors that happened in the aftermath of that event. And maybe a lot of them would have happened anyway, but they certainly couldn't have happened with the ease and repetitiveness that the stuff has gone on, both domestically and abroad. I mean, it literally launched a nightmarish global nightmarish horror. That's about the best way to describe it. And it's so important for people to know the truth and what's going on, because their lives are so materially impacted, so gravely harmed. I wrote an article this morning. I'll get it out tomorrow. I titled it America's Economic Dark Side. Well, that's one of the horrors from it. But global wars are the rest of it. Police state laws in America. It just goes on and on and on.
Indeed. And, you know, if we ever have the hope of humanity, of a united globe against our common problems, like the climate, the global warming issue is by far the most important problem we're facing right now. And to be able to address that as a world, we need to be united and not have a huge tear in the fabric of humanity right down the middle between Christendom and Islam that has been fomented by this false event. I mean, it's absolutely sinister. It's evil what has been done in the name of behind-the-scenes agendas are going on. I think they're related to oil, very strongly related to oil. And what we should be doing is the big government should be subsidizing. Instead of subsidizing oil, which is ruining the planet, they should be subsidizing increasingly every year, maybe 10 or 15% alternative clean green energies. And that way the planet could possibly pull itself up from the brink of extinction, which it's heading towards so quickly right now. Instead we're still focusing on these wars on terror. And it's antediluvian. And now we see the extent that they're going to suppress information about 9/11. And people think that they know they're getting full information when they do a Google search, but the fact is that the Google algorithms are all personally designed to match each individual's interest on the Internet. So whatever you type into Google, it finishes typing the word for you because it knows who you are. It knows your parameters, where you live, your age, all that. So it gives you a search result that is tailored to you. So you're not going to see all the news on Google. Nobody is. Two people that put in the same search result or the same search question, say, you might be in San Francisco or in Australia, you are going to get totally different results. So nobody sees the whole spectrum of news or search results. And this shows you how powerful Google is, how it can manipulate anything it wants to. And if the NSA tells it, you know, stop returning 9/11 information to people, well, that's a cinch for them.
Elizabeth, I can attest to my own personal experience. I remember when I started writing, fairly early after I began writing, when my articles got posted and reposted on different websites, Google picked up everything. And I don't check to see the postings of my article, but once in a while I do, just to get a feel for what's going on. And I know there are websites posting for me, and Google simply does not post the information. I mean, if you go to the website, you'd see the posting, but Google doesn't list them. So I guess they've caught on to me and what I stand for and what I do, and they try to best to downplay. By just excluding a lot of my postings. So I personally have been affected by this.
I think a lot of people have, and that's why it's important to bring it out so that everybody who has been affected can say, you know, it's not just me, it's happening all over the place. And that's what happened when the start of the AIDS epidemic in the 1980s. One doctor wrote a letter describing a cluster of symptoms to the New England Journal of Medicine. And the letter was published, and the whole thing just exploded. A thousand other doctors had seen the same cluster, and then they knew they had an epidemic. And I think that's what the value of my article is that people can see this, and then they can say, oh, yes, that happened to me too.
Elizabeth, I want to thank you so much for coming on and discussing this. And you know, and I've told you before, and I'll repeat it again, especially because of your work with Consensus 9/11, you have a standing invitation to come on this program anytime when there's important new Consensus 9/11 information to discuss. You let me know, and I'll get you scheduled and get you on so we can discuss it.
Thank you very much, Stephen, and thank you for all the wonderful work you do.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Matthew Witt is my guest. Matthew will be with us for the rest of the hour. Matthew is a University of Laverne professor of public administration. His work has included, let me let you explain it, Matthew. You explain it much better than I wrote it. I wrote a convoluted sentence, but you can explain exactly what you do a lot better than I can. So I'll turn it over to you, Matthew, and let you do it, and we'll jump into the topics that are most on your mind right now.
Thank you, Stephen. Always a pleasure to join you, and in this case, particularly to follow Elizabeth, who's done such remarkable work with Consensus 9/11, on which I'm actually honored to be a panelist myself, among many really fine scientists, former military personnel, and other individuals who are very concerned about the matter of real evidence.
I almost forgot that, but that's exactly right. And that's how you and I came together, because I spotted your name there, and Elizabeth recommended to me that you'd be a wonderful guest on my program, and how right she was. Another one is Graham McQueen.
Graham McQueen, very fine individual, intellectual, and bold thinker and researcher. Graham did some really original work interviewing first responders to the 9/11 incident, in pulling together a very critical archive of those voices, which, as we know, in the official account, were just sort of, you know, entirely effaced from the record. When major events occur, eyewitnesses are critical for the purposes of gathering what really happened, because it's a way of converging on complex events what otherwise no single viewpoint can achieve. But not so in the case of the official 9/11 report. Those eyewitness accounts weren't rounded up in any kind of systematic way, because they would tell a story different than once was the foregone conclusion of that report. So, Graham McQueen, a critical researcher in that process. Yeah, Stephen, you asked what was on my mind. I wish something other than what's usually on my mind.
I'd like to be able to wake up every day and say, I don't have any idea what I'm going to write about, because there really is nothing bad that I want to address. Now, wouldn't that be wonderful to be able to wake up every day and feel that way?
There was a spoof a few years ago, a remarkable bit of, I guess we'd call it agitprop, a full issue of the New York Times was printed out, a fake issue of the New York Times has printed out, declaring no more wars, you know, huge investments in social welfare and education, and so on, and dropped on street corners in New York. And people were picking this up, you know, going, gee, what, you know, what just happened? Later determined that it was a spoof. But by way of posing for our consideration, as with what Elizabeth just has done, you know, what if? You know, what if it were true? Now, in her case, it is very much true. She's giving us the counterpoint dystopian world, which is we are systematically being censored of information that we'd otherwise get. Google has been doing this now for some time. We are living in bubbles of our own making, given back to us as if it's the real world by this giant monster of a search engine. Recall when the internet got started, there were scores of search engines, you know, and eventually we're down now to, you know, Google is the go-to. There are others, but Google by far is the go-to. And as with what Elizabeth tells us, you know, what if, in fact, what you're trying to transmit is being winnowed out of the record, as with the Ministry of Truth in George Orwell's 1984? And in fact, we see more and more that this is so much, very much the case, that the reality we presume is the consequence of random nature and, you know, incredibly complex events no one could foresee, is increasingly a determined one. Michelle Kosodowski, another major figure, a voice in all of this, certainly at Global Research, you know, when he writes about the speculative endgame recently there, that, you know, since the repeal of Glass-Steagall, essentially with the adoption of Financial Services Modernization Act in 1999, he writes, market manipulation tends to completely overshadow the laws of the market, leading to a highly unstable multi-trillion dollar derivative debt, which inevitably has a bearing on the current impasse on Capitol Hill. This understanding is now acknowledged by sectors of mainstream financial analysis. Well, where there is so much behind-the-scenes manipulation and vertical integration of ownership as and interlocking directorate of players in all of this, who determines what is real becomes, you know, a remarkable fiction fantasy. Have you still got me, Stephen?
Oh, I sure do. I'm listening intently.
You bet. I've got a neighbor's calling me. This situation, I think, needs discussing. Lance Haven and Smith and I have called this the conjuring the holographic state. That what appears to be vivid and real to us is in fact manufactured, and manufactured in a systematic way. It's not manufactured just by, you know, a convergence of coincidence of interest of financial players and so on. Those financial players are themselves colluding with such high frequency and according to such a tight script that, you know, the degrees of freedom for action taken to against that, as with Elizabeth's wish for, you know, real discussions about real emergencies, the degrees of freedom for the rest of us to intervene are diminishing, and I think they're diminishing rapidly. It occurred to me, I just saw the film Gravity, which is in a sense a retelling of a real event, only putting people in the situation. The real event was, I think, a few years ago, several years ago, the collision of a couple of space stations in orbit. And the consequence of that collision is a chain reaction that pulverizes, has the potential to pulverize everything in orbit, because you get this cascading effect that's now been called the Kessler syndrome, where you get a geometric increase in collisions with each collision. You know, there's sort of, now there's two pieces, now there's four pieces, now there's 16 pieces of debris, and geometrically, and so on. And it doesn't take a debris piece very large, traveling at 20,000 miles an hour, to pose a catastrophic hazard to whatever's in the way. And so then you have this continual, you know, as we shoot more stuff into space, it becomes increasingly hazardous to get any real work done, increasingly costly to get to navigate that debris field. We now track tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands, of pieces of debris in orbiting the Earth in various orbital cycles. And I just thought, reading these pieces recently in Global Research, that in a sense we function analogously down here. So much debris now clutters the channels of what we would otherwise consider free and open communicative space, that getting any message through is really, really difficult. I beg pardon if this is a awkward metaphor. It just occurred to me. I haven't thought about it much. I was sitting waiting to speak with you, and I was thinking, wait a minute, wait, there's something about this, something about what Kosodowski was saying, that there's that you know, to presume that, as with neoclassical economics, that the market is always refreshing itself, sort of like the reset button on your computer, is a huge error. A huge error in sort of speculation. As with, for instance, a best-selling, of course it's a best-selling book, it's incredibly well documented, it's a scholarly tour de force by Carmen Reinhart and Kenneth Rogoff. This Time is Different, it's titled, 8 Centuries of Financial Folly. And the, reading the introduction, what I anticipate is to find that, you know, these very knowledgeable scholars will tell us once again the folly of human hubris, that market transactions can be controlled and speculative, dangerously speculative instruments are not what we'd otherwise think they were. These scholars tell us, you know, humanity's at it again and always will be, that we'll always fall for this these overly sanguine speculations on our reckless behavior. And it's happened so many times before, and it's happening now, and it will happen again. But eliding in every instance an account like what you try to provide so diligently on your show and your writing, what so many others try to do, as with Elizabeth and Woodworth and David Ray Griffin, and so many others, is to say this time is different in some profound respects. You know, the collapse of the tulip bubble, you know, 200 years ago, is not the same as the collapse of the mortgage lending market this time around, in large part because of the gaming of the market and the manipulation of information. Now, certainly markets have been gamed and information has been manipulated by insiders forever, since we started trading herring. I mean, forever this has been going on. But the vertical integration of global power to determine outcomes, from manipulation of weather patterns to rating of the rating of internet transactions, and communications by NSA. This is something new, and this is something profoundly new, a sort of in a quantum leap from, you know, market hubris of the past. And this is not talked about. This is systematically not talked about. This sort of this, as it were, you know, this criminality that is otherwise goes unnamed. It's not called that because it's done at such a high level that it's normalized as, you know, something else. But we need to talk about it.
It's so true. It's so true, Matt. The J.P. Morgans of the past never had the advantage of the market manipulators today. In my How Wall Street Fleeces America book, I have a chapter on market manipulation. And, of course, with supercomputers today and advanced information, inside information, that if you just get it milliseconds ahead of everybody else, it means all the difference in the world to you. I mean, the old-time robber barons and the more recent robber barons before the explosion of the computer age, they never had the advantage that the Wall Street crooks have today, or others in boardrooms that can also manipulate things their way. I think we're coming up on a break. Why don't we take a short break, Matt, and then we'll come back and we'll get right back into what you're talking about.
Sounds good.
Welcome back. I'm on with Matthew Witt, talking about all of the things going on today, the post-9/11 era, of course, the 9/11, the big lie that we began the program discussing. Matt, there's so much that concerns me, and I generally have no problem finding topics I want to write about. I mentioned that I'll have a new article. I've written so much about this particular topic, but I have a new article coming out tomorrow that I call America's Economic Dark Side, where supposedly there's been an economic recovery since early or mid 2009. I think the official end of the so-called recession was declared around the middle of the year in 2009. And whatever benefits have accrued, and there have been great benefits that have accrued to the richest people in America, studies show that the gains, the economic and financial gains from say mid 2009 to the present time, have gone 95% to what we refer to as America's top 1%. And I quoted one economist saying over that same period, I think he mentioned the top 10% getting the vast majority of the benefits. I forget the percentage. The percentages in my article I don't have in front of me right now, but I do remember what he said about the rest of the population. Let's call it 90% of the population. They got 0.04% of the gains, 0.4%. 0.4%. No, I'm reading that wrong. 4% of the gains from 2009 to the present time. His article that ran about 8 or 9 pages was dated, I believe, in September this year. So it's a brand new article. It's very much up to date. His data isn't current up to date, but it covers I think roughly maybe through 2011 into 2012. So 4% over 3 or 4 years, when you adjust it for inflation, 90% of the income of Americans, or put it this way, 90% of American households have lost, they have not gained. Official inflation is, what, 3% or so? Real inflation is closer to 9%, the inflation that's never reported. Because included in the manipulation, Matt, is the way we calculate a lot of government data. The unemployment data, the official 7.2 or so, is a fake number. It's called U3.
Yes.
the real number with the long-term unemployed that no longer get counted after 365 days, not to mention the underemployed, households that need two or more jobs. If two spouses need to have jobs, maybe they each need to have two of them to survive. The so-called minimum wage is below starvation level. But real unemployment exceeds 23%. A real inflation is closer to 9% than 3.2% or so. And these are the numbers that people never hear. So if you have that kind of inflation, plus the unemployment problem and so on, you can see that the modest gains of people who are working, they don't keep on up with inflation, and people are falling more and more behind year after year after year. And this is the way it's been going since the late 1970s, call it the last three decades or so. Ordinary Americans, the great majority, have kept declining, while the super rich and the very rich have never had it better, especially in more recent times. And this is the story that you don't get see written about in the New York Times. You don't see anything about this on television. And this is so important because it just keeps getting worse and worse, and much worse is coming. And I had a previous article a few days ago where I explained this, the so-called shutdown, Matt, and the budget debate and the debt ceiling, a complete hoax, a complete sham. Republicans and Democrats on major issues are absolutely in lockstep, and they've already agreed with each other before the shutdown what they'd be doing, because they'd already been doing it, whacking Medicare, planning to whack Social Security, whacking Medicaid. Obamacare is a scam. It enriches the big health care providers. That's what it's all about. And even with it, 30 million Americans will still be uninsured. Obama says everybody will be insured. They will not be. 30 million, we know, will not be insured. Most Americans who are insured will be underinsured. They'll pay much more for their insurance than they should. If they have a major illness and they don't have the income to cover the expense, watch out. The major reason for personal bankruptcies in America, and this has been the case for a long time, is because of medical expense reasons, and I could go on and on. This is the state of America today. It is absolutely horrendous, and it keeps getting worse, and both parties are in lockstep and absolutely slamming ordinary people to benefit the people most well off with so much wealth they simply don't need anymore, but they call the shots, and that's the way the situation is today.
That's a nice summary of the, as it were, the propagated delusion that, you know, things may be bad, but they're trending otherwise. The crisis of the hour has been abated thanks to the judicious actions of whomever and Providence. You know, it's a vortex of Babel. I don't know if it's a tower, but it seems like some force to be reckoned with, and so utterly in its way predictable and scripted. Some things, though, I think we certainly don't see coming that. As with your program and other channels, we still have a chance to discuss. I'm struck by what's now sort of emerging as this very plausible scenario, Stephen, of a massive bail-in
The
next financial collapse, and the pieces seem that trope of the bail-in, in other words, the embargoing of personal bank accounts to assure that when the next collapse occurs, very likely, you know, the reverb is around the corner, that since Obama has signaled there will not be a bailout, the only way for banks then to be guaranteed against their spectacular risk is that individual creditors would be one way or the other suborned into service to be the insurer of last resort. On the one hand, it seems absurd. But then again, look at these usurious interest rates we pay on credit cards. I mean, that's a kind of bail-in also. And as you spoke just now about the spectacular drift upward of wealth, it strikes me that, you know, reading Kosodowski, yourself, others, that since so much of the economy now is a spectral one, it is illusory, it is derivatives, risk-based, without a real, you know, industrial GNP sort of anchor or tether, that this is fundamentally a storytelling process. That that's what paper wealth is. It's a story. It's a story that says someone has control over something in perpetuity or until it's traded with someone else. And the rest of you, us, 99-point-something%, you do not have control. And it seems to me that it's a kind of bet on the future, that all we have is futures trading at this point. Yes, there are real economies. Yes, there's real production. But there is this shadow financing syndicate that is like dark matter, I think it's been described, this dark matter appropriating from physics, force that is gaining in size exponentially. And so at some point that has to be talked about. Getting back to this point of the criminal syndicate of the elite, it reminds me of sort of ancient Hebraic code that, you know, God cannot be named. You know, Yahweh was only consonants. we insert the vowels so that we can make reference to God. But God remains that which can't be signified. I wonder if there's a parallel here, you know, that the criminal elite are that which cannot be signified in polite parlance. Now, there's this powerful norm that inhibits us from naming the obvious. The emperor has no clothes. And I at some point, I think that norm collapses. And I would agree that, you know, this time is the same in that regard, that the norm around naming the fraud eventually collapses, but long after the fact of the hoodlums getting away with their loot. And so then there's a new game, and there's a new paradigm of wealth and securitized doubt. And that's really what it seems to me we're trending towards. Doubt is being securitized. That is, the mass populace's doubt that the game is anything but for those who control it. And that, as with Jürgen Habermas's speculations, the major risk is legitimation crisis. That at some point people are no longer willing to accept the flimsy premise. And then you have, you know, Greece. Then you have Spain. Then you have riot. And there was an article, I think it was Ellen Brown, Martial Law and the Economy, It's Homeland Security Preparing for the Next Wall Street Collapse, speaking about the 1+ billion rounds of ammunition that were purchased not long ago, enough to keep, I don't know, you can play with the stats, but it's a spectacular amount of ammunition purchased by Homeland Security. Tanks, other armored vehicle being deployed. I think that's whether or not that materializes. Yeah, who knows? But that there is this preparation, I think, signifies it very clearly that those among the criminal elite are logically very concerned for a mass motivational crisis that would lead to, you know, in the event of superinflation or something that occurs concurrent with a shift in currency sovereignty, that there would be people, there would be what always happens, you know. So, you know, the speculation about China, if we have a few moments, if we could talk about that.
Oh, indeed. I would just add, Matt, that nobody can predict the future. You can only make your best guess. But there certainly is a strong possibility that the excesses that are going on now will have a very bad ending. And when and if that ending comes, I expect that bad ending, and I think it'll be a worse ending than has ever been seen before. And the pain will go on the backs of ordinary people who can least tolerate it. And there certainly is the possibility that there could be a very, very heavy public reaction to it that could turn into a violent one, and that's what they're getting ready for. And again, I mean, when you have the extremes that are going on the way they are now, and government is literally in bed with the corporate crooks, especially the Wall Street ones, and they literally let them get away with grand theft with numbers that are incomprehensible. And at the same time, these banks, the major Wall Street banks, most of them are insolvent. They carry enormous trillions of dollars of derivative debt on their books. But because the so-called mark-to-market rule was taken off back I don't remember the exact time frame, in 2008 or early 2009, probably early 2009, so that even though they have this toxic debt on their books, they don't have to write it off. They can just keep it there forever. It's like it doesn't exist. So they run up these bad debts, forget about it. Nobody's going to repay them. But at some point, maybe something will happen. Push will come to shove, and these banks will have another crisis, and maybe the quantitative easing thing it's never worked. The only thing it's done is given a lot of money to speculators to play with to make more money. Certainly hasn't helped the economy at all, nor do tax cuts help the economy. You need to put money in people's pockets. But it could be that this kind of explosion will happen at some point. And a former guest on this program who sadly passed away, Matt, Bob Chapman, who was a small time, he had a small operation, independent, but I called him a Wall Street insider because he had lots of contacts, and he reported information in his newsletter twice a week, and we discussed it on this program, stuff that never made it into the mainstream either at all, or he reported it weeks or months before anything ever came out by most other people, and he expected something dire to happen sometime between the end of last year and 2017, and nobody can predict when. But again, he's seen excesses like he had never seen before. I miss him terribly, Matt, because he was a very insightful guy, and I wish we had him on now to just explain things as they're unfolding.
Right. I think that we, you know, who are absorbed, if not consumed, with these matters, Stephen, need to continue to make the couplings between, you know, sort of these domestic maneuvers and global hegemonic moves. So I'm intrigued, for instance, by, you know, the transmissions from Russia Today network, as of what Elizabeth Woodward earlier mentioned regarding her research, her case study into what was going on with the internet link she was trying to send to herself and others that would not materialize. That, you know, that sort of brinkmanship, I think, signifies so the new global, what emerging global power plays. Russia Today is garnering increasing audience share. Its English language segments are substantial, if not a major proportion of its transmissions. Its anchors are hip, have sex appeal, they're smart, gutsy, courageous. And the story that she mentions, the piece that the feature that was spoke about 9/11 as a false flag, was momentous in that it's being transmitted from Russia, who I think now is really the bully proxy for the BRIC nations. Russia has assumed this sort of, it's going to take on the hegemon of the U.S. with geopolitical high-stakes gambits, as with Snowden, as with what RT is doing, and it's going to do so on behalf of the BRIC nations to keep U.S. off balance, you know, that breaking covenant that, you know, we weren't going to talk about Chechnya as an inside job, and they're not going to talk about our inside jobs. But with the breakup of the security hegemons and their alliances, now with the BRIC nations emerging separate from the Anglo axis, that covenant is fragmenting. And I see the sort of what Elizabeth was referring to, that particular story and its elision from, you know, the internet, as indicative. And so we have, I mean, despite the poor suffering, I guess we have the specter of global conflict now that is also really worrisome. That's a ridiculous understatement.
Oh boy, is it ever? I worry about that all the time, man.
I mean, if our legitimation is going to be challenged so brazenly by Russia today, and it's obvious that Putin authorizes that kind of transmission, what is that saying? And meanwhile, there's Iran furnishing major oil supply to the super economic engine of China, and the road to Tehran through Damascus, and of course Syria, and the ruse that has been the allegations attributed the allegation of chemical attack attributed to Assad, with very specious evidence. In fact, even major news in the United States is backing away from securitizing that fraud. I think that that's, to me, those are ominous signs. We're going to become increasingly, our power is increasingly threatened, and that the specter of a Petro Yuan is very real, and that China has been gathering as much gold as it possibly can for a conversion of the yuan to a fully convertible currency seems obvious. Those moves are major existential threats to the U.S. hegemonic power. And what will we do in the face of that? What won't we do? It's nervous laughter.
Well, indeed.
Nervous laughter.
Anybody who thinks America has declared peace, Matt, is living in a dream world. And indeed, if the dollar ever loses its reserve currency status, oh my goodness, my comment, if that ever happens, and probably at some point it will, all I can say is there goes the empire, because the reserve currency status literally gets America gets so many other countries using the dollar that literally flows to the empire and fuels the imperial imperial wars, one after another. You take away that status, you change the whole ball game, and America may end up fighting a global war to keep it. And if that ever happens, well, my goodness, maybe the response is there goes the planet.
I mean, that may be the throwing over the chessboard moment.
Oh, indeed. Matt, that music means we have run out of time. It's been an important hour with you and Elizabeth. I look forward to having you back, and I thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for your hard work, Stephen. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Matt. I'll just remind listeners, as I usually do, join us on Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, on weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.